Hello, hockey fans, and welcome to the Hockey News Prospect Podcast. I'm your host, Edward Fraser, and here with me, as always, prospect expert Ryan Kennedy. Later in this edition, we're going to have an interview with Akil Thomas, who's a 2018 draft prospect from OHL Niagara, and we're going to team spotlight the San Jose Sharks. But first off, as always, headlines. And Ryan, something I found pretty interesting, we knew that a lot of NCAA players were going to get invites to the Olympics for the U.S. team, but some potential players for Canada out of the NCAA.
Yeah, there is a tournament coming up in Europe in early November called the Karjala Cup, and Canada is going to be sending a team there, I believe the U.S. is as well, and it's kind of a good trial for players that want to be on the Olympic team, and obviously the Canadians will have a lot of pros that are playing over in Europe, but they're also inviting Dylan Sakura and Zach Whitecloud. Now, Sakura is a Chicago Blackhawks draft pick, plays for Northeastern University in Boston. He is a very high-end scorer, you know, shifty guy. He's put up a lot of points last year. He's already off to a really hot start again with the Huskies. So I'm not too surprised to see him there. But Zach Whitecloud is very interesting because I wasn't very familiar with him until very recently when there were these talks bubbling up about him being a potential Olympic candidate. He's a pretty big kid, about 6'2", skates well, plays for Bemidji State in Minnesota. I guess you could say he's a bit of a late bloomer, wasn't really on a lot of radars. He could be an unrestricted free agent this summer if he should choose to leave the Beavers, but he's getting a shot, and it'll be interesting to see how these kids fare because they will be playing against, you know, men from Europe. But on the other hand, when you're playing in the NCAA, some of your opponents are like 24 years old, and they've been in the weight room for several years. So I don't think they're necessarily going to be outmatched, but I am curious to see what kind of impact they can have.
We're reaching that 10-game-ish mark in the NHL, which means it's decision time for a lot of the prospects, whether they get sent back or stick with the club.
Yeah, and Ottawa just sent Logan Brown back to Windsor. I think it's the right move for the Senators. Brown was playing bottom 6 minutes, and I thought he looked pretty decent, even though they didn't use him that much. But now he's got some games under his belt. He can go back to the Spitfires. He'll play a big role on that team because they lost a ton of talent to the pro ranks over the summer. They, of course, won the OHL playoffs and went right to the Memorial Cup final before falling. They were the hosts of the Memorial Cup. So they won the Memorial Cup, but they didn't win the playoffs. They lost early on to London, and then Erie won it. But irregardless, as we like to joke in the office, that's not a real word, kids. I think it'll be a good learning experience for Brown, where he can be the man in Windsor. You know, he can keep bulking up. That was always the issue with him, is he's got that great 6'6" frame, but he needs to fill it out. So he can keep getting stronger. You know, he can be a leader there once again. And next year he'll come back. He'll know what to expect. And I would think that he would hang full-time next year. Couple others to note, Martin Netash, the Carolina Hurricanes first rounder, he was sent back to Kometa Brno in the Czech Republic, and not too surprising there. I think it's a good spot for him. He was playing there last year against men, and you know, he's got a lot of talent. He's a hardworking guy, so he'll have a nice role there. And Carolina, you know, they've got some pretty nice forwards right now, so I get that. As we speak, Owen Tippett is still with the Florida Panthers. He's only played a handful of their games, but I was actually talking to Coach Bob Bugner just the other day, and he said that he liked Tippett so far. In his first game, he thought he was probably one of the best players on their team. Second game was okay, and then his third game, he thought was really good again. He liked Tippett's defensive awareness, and that was thought of as a weakness for Tippett. Coming out of OHL Mississauga. So it's good to hear that. He hadn't really gotten the score sheet yet, but if he's doing better things away from the puck, I think that bodes really well for the young man, and it'll be interesting to see what happens with him. Also, something we just heard before we started the podcast is apparently Columbus has told Pierre-Luc Dubois, find yourself a house, you're staying. So that's great news for him. Obviously, there's been a lot of pressure since he was taken ahead of Jesse Puljujärvi and going number three in that draft behind Auston Matthews and Patrick Laine. So he's been working hard. He's a big kid. He can give you a lot of different looks, and it'll be fun to see what he can do with Columbus the rest of the year.
course, as so many other sports magazines do, we have the THN cover curse here, whereas if you get put on the cover, more than likely you're going to get injured within the next couple of weeks. Well, we seem to have started a new one. It's called the THN Prospect Podcast Curse, where if you get the spotlight position for next season, you end up injured in the hours after we spotlight you.
Yeah, Andrei Svechnikov broke his hand. I think I was like on Twitter and maybe even posting about the podcast, and it came through from Bob McKenzie that Svechnikov had a broken hand. He'll be out about 8 weeks, they think, and it's tough because he was off to such an incredible start for the Barrie Colts, and they were such a fun team to watch early on. I still think, you know, they have enough guys there that they'll survive. And, you know, it's a broken hand. It's something that will heal, and it shouldn't give him too many problems. I don't think it's going to affect his stock. But for me, it's like, well, I guess I'm not going to, you know, go out and scout Barry for 8 weeks at least.
Sometimes, I mean, this is probably putting a bit of polish on it. But for one thing, it happens early in the season, and we know how much things can change later on in terms of draft stock. And it also gives a chance for a young kid to learn. You sit in the press box looking down at games. It gives you a different perspective and gives you learning, something that you wouldn't get because if you're healthy, you're going to be in the lineup.
Yeah, and I would think that perhaps even more importantly for Svechnikov is he can spend more time just, you know, getting used to playing in Barrie. You know, he's still learning English. He did have the benefit of playing in Muskegon last year for the USHL, so he's not going in totally blind. But, you know, it'll be nice for him to get used to his new surroundings a bit more and just sort of be there for his teammates. Alexei Lapanov, who's in his first year with the Colts as well, is off to a great start. He's the Tampa pick. But you're right. I think it's good for Svechnikov. He can watch some games, and you know he's been picking teams apart already, but it never hurts to just sort of get that full picture if you don't have anything else better to do.
Let's stay with Russian prospects and talk about Kirill Kaprizov.
Yeah, Kirill Kaprizov is just on fire for CSKA Moscow, a.k.a. Red Army. 23 points in 21 games. The next highest scorer on that team is Valery Nichushkin, who has 14 points. So Kaprizov, obviously, just in a class by himself. It's kind of fun to look at the Red Army roster this year because you got Kaprizov at the top, and you got Nichushkin, you got Mikhail Grigorenko, you got Nikita Nesterov. It's like an NHL reunion party over there. Maybe they can trade war stories about teams that did them wrong. But, you know, the thing with Kaprizov, he's so fast and he's so talented, but he did re-sign to a three-year contract this summer to play for Red Army, and it, for us in North America, that's just killer, because it's like, we want to see him over here, you know? We're greedy people. We want all the hockey talent over here, and I know the Minnesota Wild would love to have him as well, because that kind of high-end skill is tough to find, and the fact that they got him with a later-round pick is just great, but they're going to have to wait, and hopefully he comes over here fully formed, a la Evgeny Kuznetsov did in Washington, but it's just like painful to wait so long.
For our interview this week, Ryan caught up with Akil Thomas, who's a highly regarded 2018 draft prospect. Here's their chat.
I'm here with Akil Thomas from the Niagara Ice Dogs. And Akil, first off, this is your draft year. How excited are you about the campaign to come?
Yeah, it's really exciting. I know what's happening next June, so it's important to get off to a good start. And the team's got off to a really good start, so it's really exciting so far.
Now, you've had some pretty good chemistry so far with Edmonton Oilers pick Kirill Maximov. Why do you think the two of you work so well together?
I think just because I'm kind of a pass-first mentality player, and he's kind of a shoot-first mentality player. So I think whenever I find him, and he has a great ability to get a shot in net or even score. So I think it's just kind of a good combination.
And even before the season started, you had the chance to represent Canada at the Ivan Hlinka tournament, and as per usual, Canada won one gold. It's pretty rare when Canada doesn't win gold at that tournament. What was that experience like for you?
Oh, it was crazy. I mean, playing overseas is always a lot different. The rinks are different. It's just a really good experience, and our team was really good, and I played with the best players in Canada. So, it was really exciting, and it was a great experience overall.
Did it give you a sense of some of your fellow 2018 draft prospects and where you might fit in?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, every top prospect was at that tournament, so it was definitely cool to see where kind of I compare to other players and kind of learn off different players who do things maybe a little bit better than me. So it was a really good experience that way, and it was just a lot of fun.
And what would you say you do best on the ice?
I think my vision is probably my best aspect, just kind of finding that that play that maybe the average player wouldn't see, finding that open guy and just kind of using my skills down low to just kind of create offense. And I'm just trying to be more of a two-way centerman this year as well.
If there's a part of your game that you'd like to improve on this year, what would it be?
Just my strength and my consistency, my just kind of ability to make something happen every shift rather than every other shift. So that's just kind of what I'm focusing on now.
Now, your dad played hockey as well, your uncle too, but your dad, Khalil Thomas, actually had a pretty big minor league career, and you got to see him play. A lot of times it was in the American South. I'm curious what you remember from his career.
Just growing up, I didn't really go to daycare. I actually went to practice in the rink with him, so as soon as I got there, I was probably tired, so I would nap as they got ready, and then they'd kind of get ready, and I'd watch the whole practice, and I'd actually go on maybe before or after, depends on the day, and I'd go on the ice like pretty much every day as soon as I got old enough, so that actually might have been key to my development, but it was a great experience just to be around hockey from the start, and it just kind of grew in me, hockey, so it was kind of obvious that was something I wanted to be my passion, and we just kind of moved all over the place, so I kind of knew what the sacrifice for hockey was going to be. We moved from, I was born in Toronto, moved to Mississippi, moved to Flint, Oklahoma, Orlando, Jacksonville, then back to Orlando. So, and then we ended up moving back to Toronto for my hockey. So it was a lot of sacrifices for sure.
Wow, that's like quite the roster of cities right there. Do any of them stand out to you as being kind of neat places to live?
Probably Mississippi, just because my dad won 2 championships there. So that was definitely probably our whole family's favorite place hockey-wise, and that's just kind of where it all started for me, and I kind of got introduced to hockey there. So probably Mississippi is probably the place that stood out for me.
And how much do you talk to your dad about hockey?
Might be surprised if we go a conversation without kind of touching it. So pretty much every conversation is about hockey, and it's just kind of our relationship. It's how we kind of bond.
What sort of advice does he have for you? Just, you know, obviously you want to be a pro. You want to reach the highest level you can. And he's been, you know, on teams. He's been in different organizations. Does he tell you much about, you know, what it takes to just sort of get to that pro level?
Oh, yeah. The two words he's said to me my whole life is just hard work. He was a double-A player growing up. Played double-A until midget, and then made a junior team, and from there he went straight to pro. So his journey just kind of revolved around hard work, and that's just what he's installed in my brain throughout the years, and I've been trying to use it as much as I can, because I know he's been through everything, and I just listen to him, and I'm thankful for that.
Right on. And finally, if there was an NHL player that you'd like to model your game after, who would it be?
A couple guys. I don't really have one main guy, but in a way, Jonathan Toews, and in another way, William Nylander, and then one other way, Claude Giroux, and maybe Jamie Benn. So a little bit of those players I like to watch, and I like the way Getzlaf plays, but he's a lot bigger body, so we'd have to play kind of differently. But those guys I mentioned are definitely guys I've kind of looked up to and keep tab on throughout the years.
Well, it's a pretty good cast. Thanks so much for doing this.
No problem.
Our 2018 draft spotlight this week is on Dmitry Zavgorodny, and he was absolutely fantastic at the Ivan Holinka tournament.
Yeah, this is when he really first came into the spotlight for me originally. Playing for Russia, he had 10 points in 5 games, seemed to be scoring at will at what is, you know, a really good under-18 tournament in the summer. Really kind of sets the stage for the prospect season. And the Russians ended up losing the bronze medal in overtime to Sweden. But having said that, you know, Zavgorodny was excellent. And came over to Rimouski as an import pick, and the Oceanic, they really needed him because, you know, they were going to be a young team, and I think it was a good addition for them.
And he's got some chemistry right away.
Yeah, kind of fun. He's been playing with Alexis Lafreniere, who was the number one overall pick in the Quebec League draft. And Lafreniere has been amazing so far, even though he's only 16. Both him and Zavgorodny have been point-per-game players, and they really work well with each other. Zavgorodny, he's not a big guy. He's probably about 5'9", but... You know, the talent that they have, you can tell both of them are so skilled, and I think they can feed off each other very well there. And so far, it's worked out very well for Rimouski.
Early in the year, of course, but where would you see Zavgorodny going right now?
Well, I see him right now as probably a late first rounder. It's funny. I don't like making player comparisons because I'm not good at it, and I also think it puts sort of weird expectations on the younger kid. But when I see Zavgorodny, I think about Jaden Schwartz from the St. Louis Blues. You know, they have a similar frame where they're not big. They're kind of like 5'9", 5'10", 165 pounds or whatever. But they're both very smart. Two-way guys. You know, I was talking to a scout about Zavgorodny, and he said the great thing is he never cheats on defense. He puts in the work. But when he is near the net, he's going to make things happen. And you think about the great start that Jaden Schwartz is off to this year, you can see that high end. And I think Zavgorodny has the same, where he can really put pucks in net. He goes to the right places. You know, he's not afraid to go in tight to get his offense. And I think it's a good start. And, you know, the size might ding him a little bit, but I certainly see him as a first rounder right now.
Team spotlight is the San Jose Sharks. And I don't want to say that this is a team bereft of prospects. They've got some nice talent, but because of their success year after year after year, they don't draft very high. I'd have to go back and look, but I can't imagine they've had a top 10 pick in 15 years. Still some nice prospects on this list, topped by Josh Norris.
Yeah, and I would agree with you where San Jose is in the position where they've been going for it for so long, and they went to a Stanley Cup final that, you know, you're right. There's not a lot of top 10 picks, and then you get, you know, one of the higher guys is Mirko Mueller. He's off in New Jersey right now. But, I mean, that's how it goes, and if you're winning games, it matters less than if you're losing a lot more. But Josh Norris, you know, he was one of their top picks in the 2017 draft. He was their first rounder, played for Team USA's National Team Development Program. Now he's a freshman with the University of Michigan, and so far so good. He's their leading scorer. He's been a point-per-game guy. The book on him was always that he wasn't necessarily an elite offensive player, but he was very consistent, he had great hockey sense, and he was a hard worker. So even when that NTDP team wasn't really clicking, he was still showing up. And that seems to have carried over to his Michigan days.
A bit of an interesting note with Norris as well is that we did our best case scenario picks for draft preview, and his was Logan Couture, and this is before we knew he was going to go to the Sharks. But out of the NCAA, Mario Ferrero.
Yeah, this is an interesting case for me. I really liked this pick by San Jose. Again, he was another 2017 pick by them. Coming out of USHL Des Moines, he's now a freshman with UMass. And it's funny because coming into the season, the whole thing with UMass was Cale Makar was their big freshman defenseman coming in. And I say big, you know, in terms of clout, because Makar is not actually that big. Ferraro's a similar size to Makar. And, you know, I mean, he might not have had the same high-end, profile, but he's also pretty tenacious like Makar, and he can move the puck. And so far in the early going for the Minutemen, they're actually tied in scoring. They both had 3 points early on in their first couple of games. So it's kind of cool to see Ferraro keeping up with the fourth overall pick. And then one more NCAA player that I have to mention is Dylan Gambrell. playing for the defending champion Denver Pioneers. Gambrell's been there for a couple of years now. I would expect this is going to be his final year at Denver. And he's centering Troy Terry, the true American hero, as as I like to call him. And Gambrell's had an excellent career with the Pioneers, put up a ton of points, and he's back at it once again. And it'll be interesting to see how well Denver can do, because if they repeated as national champions, I don't think it would be a surprise to anybody.
The Sharks do tend to lean towards NCAA players, but there is one player playing Major Junior who have your eye on.
Yeah, Ivan Cechovic is kind of a fun player. For whatever reason, I watched a lot of Bay Como games last year, and he was their most prominent scorer for me. Again, not a big guy, but very talented, and he's off to another good start this year with Bay Como. And you know, he's a value pick. There were some scouts I talked to last year that weren't interested. Other ones, you know, they could see he had that offensive talent, and you know, he can really place the puck well. And it'll be interesting to see if San Jose can find a place for him in the next couple of years.
Noah Rod playing over in Europe?
Yeah, Noah Rod is a player that's been in the system for a couple of years now, and he's still in Switzerland. He played a little bit with the AHL San Jose Barracudas last year, not too much, but doesn't have a point yet through five games back home. I feel like this is kind of a make-or-break year for him, as young as he is. I'm not sure if the plan is for him to come to North America after his Swiss season is finished, but he was never going to be a big offensive guy. He's kind of an agitator. He plays hard, finishes his checks, gets up on guys on the forecheck. So he's pretty useful, but I think that you got to see a little, at least a modicum of offense. So hopefully he can snap out of that funk.
Several players playing with those Barracuda who we might see in Sharks uniform, maybe even as early as this year.
Yeah, I mean, Danny O'Regan is a player that we saw him a couple of games at the Sharks last year, got a cup of coffee, and, you know, again, point-per-game guy down in the AHL, not a big guy, but he's been a really good pro scorer, and I think it's to the point where if the Sharks need him and he comes up, he really has to make a statement, because eventually you're going to get caught by younger prospects, and, you know, It's fine to be a great AHL player, but I think O'Regan really needs to seize the opportunities when he gets them, and I think he has that capability. It's just a matter of seeing it. Another interesting player is Adam Haluka, who was passed over in the draft a couple of times, and then San Jose picked him up. He's actually leading the Barracuda in scoring. He's a two-way guy. He's got some nice size. Came out of Spokane in the Dub. And again, like, you know, if you get your shot with San Jose, I think you really need to prove it, because they're such a veteran team, and that's going to change soon. I mean, they've already lost Patrick Marleau. It'll be interesting to see how much longer Joe Thornton is with the organization. But, you know, they're going to need some scoring punch. They're going to need some guys to fill roles. And if you're not drafting high, then you really got to find value. And I think those guys have a chance. Another final guy to keep an eye on this year, Jeremy Waugh, the defenseman. He had some injury problems when he was in the Quebec League, but a very solid player, a great two-way guy, and I think it's going to be fun to watch him in his first pro season with the Barracuda, see what he can do, and I would expect that's the kind of player that the Sharks could pencil into a top six role as soon as next year if he progresses the way we think he can.
That's our look around the world of prospects for this week. Next week, we'll be back with our team profile on the St. Louis Blues. For Ryan Kennedy, I'm Edward Fraser. Thanks for listening.